The subject that we're talking about tonight is the subject of the Holy Grail. And it's one of those topics that I think for most people, it's something that their eyes will just sort of kind of glaze over when you're talking about the Holy Grail. It's sort of like talking about, you know, what do they used to say, the price of tea in China? You know, it's like one of those things that it's either kid stuff that you read about in kids' storybooks, or it's something that is fantasy, okay? Our popular acquaintance with it is like Indiana Jones. What was the movie called, Indiana Jones and the Quest for the Grail? Or
The Last Crusade.
It was The Last Crusade, okay. All right. So that's probably about the extent of people's knowledge about the Holy Grail. King Arthur and the cup of the Last Supper and, you know, all the adventures that are going involved in trying to find the thing, because it supposedly has some supernatural, magical, mystical powers to it. So that's why everybody wants it. And anyway, I really think that something like that is probably, I mean, it's entertaining, but it's probably on the level of children's story time level kind of material. And when you really get into the study of the subject of the Holy Grail, it becomes immense in its scope, immense in its meaning, because really the whole history of Western civilization is wrapped up in this story about the Holy Grail. Believe it or not, a whole Western civilization is wrapped up in this thing. And, you know, this was, I've been, like I say, as I've been immersed in this subject for several years, it's a subject that still intimidates me as far as an ability to talk about. I've delayed talking about it just because of its immensity. But I'm attempting it tonight and tomorrow. One of the things that is tough is that really this whole subject is the work of French and Welsh writers. And I don't know French and I don't know Welsh. And so it's, as we're trying to go through, and as I try to pronounce names and places in France and Britain and things, anyone listening to this tape that has first-rate knowledge of the pronunciation of those words are going to say, yep, this is a second-rate scholar here that's talking about this, and I'm willing to admit that. But if we can look past the names of the places and the people involved here and get looking at the message, I feel that I really have a grasp of the message about the Holy Grail. And so that's what we're going to try to get to. Now, once upon a time, several years ago, I taught, and when we lived in Kansas, I taught a class on early church history. It was a seven-part series that I did, and that is on audio cassette. And I feel that was well done. Actually, it's on video cassette too, if you can stand to look at me for the whole 14 hours. But anyway, I did not get to the last section. We ran out of time on the Age of Descent. Okay, that was the last lesson I was going to teach. And I was going to be talking about the final outposts of the old Catholic Church. We're talking about the pre-Roman Catholic Church, the old Catholic Church, monastic orders and reform, the universities and the rise of royal independence, and the precursors of Wycliffe and Huss. And of course, those were morning stars of the Reformation. And really, this presentation on the Holy Grail tonight, tomorrow, is a completion of this study that I did, a presentation that I made on early church history. And so that will kind of complete the series. And it's taken me, my goodness, I think I taught this in 97, so that's 5 years ago, yeah. So anyway, on the outline, I've got written down here the first paragraph, and after the heading, says, "The Grail Romances as Precursors to Renaissance and Reformation." On Friday night and Saturday morning, we will be studying the Grail Romances as precursors to Renaissance and Reformation. Everyone has heard about the Holy Grail and King Arthur, but few know what this legend is all about and why it is such a powerful symbol in Western literature. During the Dark Ages, true Christianity went underground. Learn how the Grail legends help preserve the heritage of the Jerusalem Church and Celtic Christianity. Learn how these stories challenge us today with a message for our time. And so before we get into talking about the Holy Grail, we need to talk about some of the things that I identified in this first paragraph here. For instance, the Grail romances. Now, I'm assuming when we talk about the Holy Grail that at least if we've got any exposure to popular culture, you know, Monty Python's Quest for the Holy Grail and Indiana Jones, we know that we're talking about the cup of the Last Supper, okay, as a relic, as a sacred relic, as something that everybody's trying to find. Okay, so that's what we're talking about. Well, we use the term romance, even though there is a little bit of romance in terms of boy-girl romance in the stories about the Holy Grail. We call it a romance because it's stories about heroes and their adventures, okay? And that's why it's called a romance. The reason why we say that these are precursors to the Renaissance and the Reformation, and then I need to do a little history here. What is the Renaissance and Reformation? Well, the Renaissance is that period that came at the end of what's called the Middle Ages. The classical period, of course, is the period that is about the Greek and the Roman era. And then after that was what was called the Dark Ages and the Middle Ages. And then after that came the Renaissance. Now the Renaissance, the word Renaissance means new birth. And that is a time, a period in Western civilization, or a time of principally the experience of Europe, where people began to be interested in material from the classical period. All right, that was like the writings of Aristotle and Plato and some of the other famous writers of that period, such as Seneca and so on. Then there's an awakening at that time of inquiry and discovery that takes place during the time of the Renaissance. People were asking questions. Yeah.
James, did you place that of around 1200 to 1600? Or what do you place
that? Yeah. Generally, the time period of that, I look upon the Renaissance as starting during the really catching hold during the 14th century. That would be the 1300s. And then about a century and a half later, we start having what is called the Reformation. Because if we're exposing, see, in the universities, we're being exposed to classical literature. Yeah, that was the Greek and Roman period. Yeah, so that would encompass the 5 centuries or so before Christ and the 5 centuries after Christ, encompassing the predominance of Greek and Roman civilization that dominated Europe. Okay, so we're obviously Europe-centric here in talking about this whole period. And of course, this is our heritage as members of a civilization that is called Western civilization. And this has been our experience. And so this was a Renaissance period, a time for a new discovery of trying to come up with new ideas, trying to break the confines out of the confines of church dogma. Now, we're going to say a lot of negative things about the Roman Catholic Church. And that doesn't mean that the Roman Catholic Church is full of bad people, or that the Roman Catholic Church hasn't had good people that have done great and wonderful things. What it's simply saying is the Roman Catholic Church represents a tradition that's been inimical, you might say, to the progress of Western civilization. It served a purpose for a time for certain groups of people, but it became ossified, it became encrusted, it became institutionalized, and became like a what would be another good synonym that I could use here?
Fossil,
thank you. Fossilized itself. And the Roman Catholic Church, like any establishment, Okay, now see, the Roman Catholic Church became dominant and became in control of the institutions of power, of temporal power. And any religion and any institution that does that eventually gets corrupted when it has all the power. So it's not so much that we're saying that the church corrupted the state, perhaps, as we're saying that the state corrupted the church. Because of their concerns with temporal power, they corrupted themselves. And so the Roman Church was not able to break out of that, and consequently there had to be some kind of a revolt that would take place, and that took place in Europe. Now, anytime you have a group that's the top dog, they're eventually going to be criticized, aren't they, if they're the top dog long enough. If the Democrats are in power long enough, they'll eventually come under enough criticism that the Republicans get their chance. And then the Republicans are in long enough, then the same process happens. They get booted out. We see this in our political institutions in our country today. And so anytime that a group has the power, they're going to fail at some point in the exercise of that power, simply because they're fallible. Now, the problem with the church in the Middle Ages is they claimed to be infallible, because they were the direct recipients of, from God, the Pope. He gets his instructions from God himself, so God cannot make mistakes, and the Pope can't make mistakes, so the church can't make mistakes. And if you say that the world is around when we say it's flat, then, you're obviously in error and you deserve to be punished, see. And so this is what happens. This is what's happened to the Communist Party. The Communist Party is a secular example of Catholicism in power. It's communism, and like in Russia, for instance, had to assume that they were the all-encompassing institution for the whole of society. They could control, they had control of every facet of society, and they could not make mistakes. It was impossible for them to make mistakes, and when they did make mistakes, they had to blame someone else. That's why Stalin had this long parade of people that they executed if there was a famine, or if there was an earthquake, or a building fell down. There was always somebody else to blame, but it was never the party that was wrong, never the rulers that were wrong. It was always somebody else to blame for it that had to be punished. And so they would have these inquisitions, and they would have this often under torture. People would confess, and then they had to sign the confession so that everybody would know that they were the devil that caused the problems. So communism followed the same problem that the Catholic Church did. And when finally the communists, as soon as they acknowledged that they were not infallible, they came crashing down. So anyway, so the Renaissance, and then of course what led to the Reformation was that we have classical literature, we need to have the scriptures as well. People need to have access to the scriptures. And so that was why we found the rise of the Protestant Reformation. And then when the scriptures were made available to the people, they found that the church was not in conformity to the scriptures. And so then we began to see a movement of starting other churches. And thus that led to the Reformation. Now I'm going to show how the Grail romances, these stories about the Holy Grail, were really seen. Now these stories were written during the about 1000 AD to 1200 AD, that period there. So we're talking about the 10th, or rather the 11th, 12th, and the 13th centuries there. See, that these romances were being written, were promulgated. Now the stories were being spread around orally for centuries prior to that. And this is the time when they were being written down. And so you had what they called the bardic tradition, that is, communities. You see, back in those days, they didn't have TV and radio, and they didn't have storybooks, but what they had were storytellers. And they had people that would travel around from village to village, city to city, and they would tell stories. And that was how people were entertained very often, was by going to listen to the bard. He was going to come and tell the story. William Shakespeare is called a bard, isn't he? Because he did these plays. Oftentimes the bards would do skits, reenactments, and for the people, see, to tell their story. And so the Holy Grail was a part of